Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, the Wednesday edition. Coming up on today's program, the California drought that they've had for quite a few years. It may be coming to an end. They've had a lot of rain, and things are filling up. A new survey on police officers reveals a changing attitude about what they do on the job. It's kind of frightening. We'll have details. And the hidden message in President Obama's farewell speech. That story and more, Wednesday edition, Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we are at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon is here today. Grant, we had an email yesterday from one of our listeners, and you can email us, by the way, comments at kpcg.fm, and you can follow us on Twitter, too, at kpcgfm. But we had an email from a listener that said they like listening to us, can't always catch us live. Is there a podcast? Yes.
Indeed.
There is a podcast. You can go to iTunes and just search for Trumpet Radio Live and subscribe to the podcast. You can find the archives on SoundCloud as well or at kpcg.fm. There's a variety of ways to access the programming here on KPCG. It doesn't always fit into people's schedules to listen live.
It doesn't.
But they don't want to miss out.
At least it wasn't a resounding rebuke. I was expecting some correction from the email.
No. And thankfully, we had a positive response for them that, in fact, you can get the podcast, put it on your smartphone, take a walk around the neighborhood, have a chuckle with us, and walk your 30 to 1 hour a day, 30 minutes to 1 hour, whatever it is. I think 30 minutes is the recommendation.
Yes, and walking is highly recommended.
Highly, highly recommended. We've been mentioning over the last several days about these storms going on the West Coast. Knocked over one of our big favorite trees out there. This is according to the East Bay Times, not the shoe company, but this is an actual paper. California storms add 350 billion gallons of water to parched reservoirs. I think we were talking back in the summer about how the reservoirs were so far down. And now they are filling up, in some cases, up to 93% full from 42% in the case of the Lexington Reservoir near Los Gatos. That's 31 feet that it's gone up since New Year's Day.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's something that they were extremely concerned about, how they were going to fill up the reservoirs or try to import water from elsewhere. That used to be their biggest concern, pretty much.
Yeah, so they say perhaps the most dramatic was San Luis Reservoir, California's fifth largest, located between Gilroy and Los Banos. Sitting at 10% full in August, it is now at 66% full, having risen 134 feet. At current rates, it may fill to the top for the first time since 2011. So that is good news. I guess you do tend to think, though, what if it keeps raining? You know, it seems like they're in a state of extremes. Mm-hmm. Extreme drought, extreme storms. And so it's good that they're getting the water. But it'll be interesting to see what the rest of the weather pattern is.
Yeah, too much rain obviously could be deadly. We've had stories about flooding that's killed people in other parts of the U.S. So they don't want to get too much rain, but maybe this is just making up for lost time after all the droughts and wildfires that they've been having.
Yeah, they're still technically in a drought, and they are considered to be in a drought until I think the governor says they're not. Not that that really matters, I guess. But
didn't realize that our officials had so much power over the weather.
Yeah, they have to decide if they're officially in a drought or not. But definitely that rain is helping out for now. There is a survey that's been conducted. U.S. police are more reluctant to use force, according to the survey. Is that a surprise to anyone?
That's what I was about to ask. Not at all.
They should have just named the article. New survey finds what everybody thought to be true is True.
That seems like it's been the aim of the Obama administration and a lot of government officials. Like we always say, they just comment on these issues before they know the facts of whatever specific case they're talking about. And it really does stir up a lot of emotion. Not a whole lot of thought, but a lot of emotion.
You can understand it from the police officer's perspective. You want to go and do your day's work. You want to get home safely and then take your kids to baseball practice or whatever's going on in your life. You'd never want to have a big confrontation anyway, but especially if you know that there's a high likelihood that you're going to be under some sort of investigation. It could blow up to be a huge national situation. People aren't going to be as quick. The officers are not going to be as quick to act, and that's exactly what this survey found.
Yeah, and there really is an undercurrent of distrust toward the police in this country right now. And one example even is just how so many of them have been required to wear body cameras. That would be offensive to them. I mean, imagine if we had to walk around at work and wear body cameras the whole time because our supervisors didn't believe a word we said about what we were doing. I mean, that's just
careful
kind of what's
now.
Happening.
Don't put any ideas out there. Yeah. This article says, attention surrounding police shootings of black men have increased officers' reluctance to use force and stop suspicious people, while heightening tensions between black people and police, according to a broad survey of police officers that was released today. So the thing is, if you're not as likely to check out suspicious people, what does that do for the community? It means you have a lot more suspicious people. Not all doing bad things, but probably some are.
Right, and there have been instances like with the former New York mayor, Rudy Giuliani, and how he instituted proactive policing where if he did see someone acting suspiciously on the street or if a police officer saw that, then they could go investigate. And oftentimes that did prevent bigger crimes because what we saw after those types of policing methods were done away with pretty much was a lot of violent crimes increasing, robberies and things like that, where if you investigate someone for loitering or for possibly selling drugs on the corner, it prevents a more serious crime from taking place.
For sure. Well, I just imagine personally if you notice some car driving slowly past your house every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, legally they could do that, I guess, but it would be unnerving and you'd think, that's suspicious. I should check that out.
Right.
Why is this happening? This study of nearly 8,000 officers across the country was conducted by the Pew Research Center and the National Police Research Platform between May and August, and also shows a deep gulf between the attitudes of police and the general public over racial equality and officer-involved shootings. There's a difference between the people that are on the ground involved and the general public. What do you have in between those two? You have the media. That's the gap between those two groups. The people actually doing the job, who actually know what day in and day out it's like, and those that are listening to the narrative of what the day in and day out is like. The media provides that. And it's really changed people's attitudes towards the police force.
Right. The media is basically like the middleman in that situation. And so they do have a really sobering responsibility that it doesn't seem like they're taking seriously enough. I mean, just going along with these lies like hands up, don't shoot and other really tales of fiction, that is stirring up some hatred in this country that really will end quite badly.
That whole hands up, don't shoot, that false narrative. First of all, the Brown was his name, right?
Michael Brown.
Brown. He was in the street, walking in the middle of the street, which was illegal, and then doing a few other things. I mean, think about it again on a personal level. What if somebody just walked into your house that you don't know, but they had their hands up? Would that be okay? Would you be fine with that? You know, he's sitting on your couch watching TV with you. You don't know who he is, but his hands are up, so everything's fine.
What if in one hand he had a bag full of stolen groceries?
Yeah.
And he happened to be smelling of marijuana? Would that also make you a little bit more uncomfortable?
Yeah, but his hands are up, so
of course
it's fine. As if that's the, as long as your hands are up, you can do whatever you want. Right. With the rest of your body. Bizarre.
Lots of kicks.
Yeah. Karate kicks. In the survey, they said 76% of officers said that they are now more reluctant to use force, even when they believe it is appropriate. And 72% said they are less willing to stop and question people who seem suspicious, as we mentioned before. So you're going to see the crime rates increase. You're going to. You have to, because all this really is the rise of lawlessness. And so crime will increase.
Yeah, for the police, it really is them having to choose between two really bad options. Obviously, the chance of being shot dead for not using lethal force in the first place, or the even greater possibility of being put in prison for a very long time due to a corrupt justice system that really has turned against the police. I think a lot of the time they're more willing to take the off chance that they might get shot instead of being put in prison, which in some cases could be even worse.
I'd like to see the numbers on how many crimes are stopped versus how many mistakes the police make with the getting somebody that didn't commit a crime and maybe injuring them or taking them to the station or whatever. It'd be interesting to see the difference between those two numbers, because really what some are saying is they shouldn't in any way ever make a mistake, therefore do nothing. So you really don't have a police force. So to get rid of the one mistake, let's say, you're going to allow how many crimes? 100? 200? I mean, what are the numbers? Mm-hmm. That's really the equation you have to look at.
Yeah, my guess would be that if we compared the amount of mistakes they make to all the times that other people in other fields make mistakes, they probably are a lot more accurate than nearly any other field, because really they are paying so close attention. They know that so much is at stake. They're probably a lot more, they probably pay a lot more attention to detail than other people do.
Well, and even a lot of those quote unquote mistakes really aren't mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times the right thing did happen, but it's been blown out of proportion,
right,
or presented in a wrong way. So that's a really interesting survey. In a related note to that, this is a crazy story. They say just 1 week into the 115th Congress, and the House is already in the midst of a full-fledged battle. Again, that's not surprising. Over constituent artwork in a Capitol Hill tunnel, the Democrats keep putting this picture up. It's a painting. And then the Republicans keep taking it down. Mm-hmm. And back and forth. It's a painting of police, and they're depicted as pigs. And that's in a government building. And the Republicans are like, get that off the wall. So they're pulling it off the wall. And the Democrats say no, and they put it back up on the wall. So petty on every level. But why do you have a painting of officers looking like pigs in a government building?
Yeah, it's pretty simple at this point to tell that one side is blatantly anti-police and they are out there with it. Apparently it gets them a lot of support, or else why else would they do it? A lot of people seem to be upset with the police and they're tapping into that. But it's just really a disgusting, vile message that they're putting out there to do something like that.
The particular individual is Democratic Representative William Lacey Clay. He himself has rehung the painting three times. The artwork, as mentioned, depicts some police officers as pigs. Okay, so why is it there? Well, the painting by high school student David Polfus won Clay's congressional art competition last May. Members do not select the artists. They do not sign off on the artistic concepts and have no role in judging the competition, Clay said. So he's coming at it like, well, this student won the contest that I'm, part of. I didn't decide that he was the winner, but he won. Therefore, we have to hang the painting.
No, we don't.
Let's get serious. It's a ridiculous painting. It's not even that good, quite frankly,
right,
artistically. You don't have to hang that there. It's inappropriate. I don't care if he won the contest. Change the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hang that painting in a government building.
Well, what other time in history would he have ever won that contest with a painting like that anyway? Obviously, last 8 years when everyone seems to be hating the police anyway, that's the climate in which he won the award.
Right.
We would have never won that in the 40s or the 50s or any other decade.
Sure, exactly. It's one of those where I suppose I would like to have seen a lot of the other paintings. I bet there were some really good ones, but because he hit on the hot button mm-hmm. issue, he's got to win that one though.
That Democratic congressman should allow paintings of himself to be portrayed as a pig. If he's okay with that, then maybe he could allow it for others.
I had the same thought. Well, what if somebody gave him a painting of himself or his family being depicted very horribly? Would he be like, well, what can I say? He won the contest. Put it on the wall.
No way.
Of course not. So this is kind of one of those weird, sometimes in offices there's weird stuff that happens where like two people will be having a conflict and, one will move something, the other one will move it back. And
This is happening at the highest levels of government. They're right. taking the painting down and putting it back up and taking it down. And so that's what they're spending their time doing.
Yeah, the obvious solution would be the next time the Republicans take the painting down, take it out back, put it in the wood chipper, burn it, trash it, whatever you have to do to make sure it can't be put back up on the wall. I mean, we just need to have some level of respect for the people who are putting their lives on the line for everyone else.
Yeah. What other country would you really see that in? I mean, maybe there might be an example I'm not thinking of, but where a national institution that is there to help protect the nation is openly mocked.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's happened, but it's...
Wouldn't happen in a police state or no. a place where freedoms were actually taken away.
Yeah, for sure. So, strange situation there. This ties in a little bit here with government spending. Senator Jeff Flake highlights 50 examples of questionable, even frivolous federal spending in the latest edition of his government waste book. He calls the latest volume Waste Book, Porkymon Go. All told, the Arizona Republicans' office says it details more than $5 billion in inappropriate spending by federal departments and agencies. So there's five examples here from this book. He targets a total of $1.5 million in grants through the National Science Foundation to test what happens when fish use treadmills. You heard that right. In one example, a mud skipper, which is a fish that can live out of water longer than most, is put on a small treadmill. In the other case, bluegill fish were sent through treadmill-like swim tunnels. I don't know what they were trying to find.
Well, how could that possibly cost $1.5 million anyway? That seems like it's just a front for some other type of spending.
Well, you know, you have to understand, Grant, those tiny fish treadmills are very expensive.
Apparently.
I can buy a full human treadmill for a lot less than that.
Many of them, yeah.
Really interesting. Another example highlighted in this book on government spending. $36,700 venture from the Environmental Protection Agency to create a version of the Berkshire region of Massachusetts in the Minecraft video game. It says instead of pouring money down the drain in virtual worlds, EPA should target resources to fixing real problems in the real world. So that's a popular video game, Minecraft. I guess you can build cities and things. I myself have not played it, but I've heard of it. So they spent $36,700 to recreate the Berkshire region of Massachusetts within the video game.
Wow. Maybe they should just literally pour actual money down the drain. That would probably be more worthwhile.
Yeah. Strange. Strange. I don't know what the whole story is in all of these, but they are pretty alarming.
Yeah.
The FBI spent roughly $1.2 million to acquire and then remove an art installation from its Miami field office that made folks sick. The $750,000 sculpture of Western Red Cedar was making people at the field office sick because of the presence of cedar dust. So that one, it's a waste of money, but at least it was just sort of a mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't know that people would get sick from it. But that is a lot of money to spend on an art installation.
Yeah, sure is. There should be like an office fund to pay for things like that. It probably isn't necessarily something that we should be spending $750,000 for.
I wonder what they did with it. I could get it, put it in my yard. What is it of?
Do you have $750,000?
No.
Definitely.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't. Another one. The report points to $1.7 million from the Commerce Department for the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York, for holograms of comedians who have died. The first hologram developed is of Jamestown native Lucille Ball of I Love Lucy fame. And so they're going to make more of them. $1.7 million to make holograms of people that aren't alive anymore.
Chris Farley?
It costs more.
Possibly worth it?
He was a big guy. You have to spend more on that hologram.
High-level technology and a whole lot of it.
Strange. Last one here. West Virginia University drew scrutiny in the report for a $3.5 million study of why people fear dentists. With the possibilities ranging from having teeth scraped, filled, or pulled, it is not surprising patients feel some anxiety about spending time in the dentist chair. That's what they found out. They spent $3.5 million to figure that one out.
Yeah, that's a questionable expenditure, I would say.
I just want to know how you get involved in these. Like, how do you, who do you go to ask for that? Because I could think of all kinds of studies that I already know the answer to,
mm-hmm.
but if they wanted to pay me to, like, investigate it further, I'd love to.
Everyone who's asking for grants for those types of things probably has someone they know who's going to give them a special favor.
It's really interesting to see. And he has a whole book on all these government spendings, spending issues. So, strange. The fish on the treadmill, that kind of takes the cake for me though. I don't know what you would try to discover by that. I just have this vision of this fish with like headphones on and sweatpants running on a treadmill.
Just a total waste of time. I mean, that would almost seem like it's fiction.
Yeah. You would think it was just a joke, like a cartoon. I just envision this like Far Side cartoon, a picture of a fish.
Some sort of an alternate universe where the outcome of a fish running on a treadmill has any sort of impact on society at large.
Really strange stuff. You ever felt sick of school?
Just maybe once or twice. That's about
Everybody feels that way sometimes. Well, in this case, kids are actually sick and they can't go to school. An Illinois high school has canceled classes for a second day due to stomach virus affecting nearly a third of its 2,500 students. It has hit them like the plague. About 800 students at St. Charles East High School were ill with stomach flu, and so they had to shut school down. The school district said it was working with the Illinois Department of Public Health to more clearly identify the virus and following the procedures in the meantime, including staying home. The CDC Center for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that people with stomach flu just not be around other people.
That's biblical.
That's the biblical principle there.
Yeah, quarantine. If people just would follow that, the whole school wouldn't be getting sick.
Yeah, so it's spread quick. Those things do spread quickly. Mm-hmm. So 800 students of the 2,500 sick with it. What do you think the real numbers are? 50 sick, everybody else faking? Or I don't feel so good today.
It depends on the outlook there, because even the school might under-exaggerate the numbers just to look a little bit better. So who knows?
It could be. This is a really high number, though, high percentage. Every year going
Nearly
to public.
A third.
Yeah. Wow. Going to public school every year, obviously, the flus, the colds would make their rounds. But I never remember it being, you know, anything like that. Mm-hmm. It seemed like you'd have a few out of class here or there, but it wasn't. Nothing like this percentage. So who knows what happened there, but there have been reports, I haven't looked into them too much, about, you know, the fear that some of these illnesses are getting a little stronger,
mm-hmm.
maybe because of antibiotics, and then they're adapting, and people aren't able to fight them off in the same way, so who knows?
Yeah, that's always a possibility. I know a lot of outrageous examples of people not quarantining and then it really hurting others, because my sister actually got chicken pox from going to the ice rink. So there must have been some kid there who was skating around with chicken pox, and that would obviously be a time where the child should be at home alone.
Yeah. You know, you say that, and it reminds me of this commercial that really befuddles me. It's for Skittles. And there's I don't know if you've seen this, but there's two kids, and they're at school. They're, like, out by the sports field, and the one, he has Skittles all over his face, like it's chicken pox.
Right.
And I don't remember what the other kid says. Like, is it contagious or something? And he's like, I don't think so. And the one kid pulls one of them off and eats it, and then they have it all over them. And
disgusting.
I don't know how that would make people want to eat Skittles. Like, what about that says? You pulled it off of another human, though.
Yeah.
And then you had them all over you. I don't see the why I'd want to eat Skittles after that.
Yeah, Skittles in that case symbolize chicken pox or a wart or something.
Yeah.
And so why would you want to compare your candy to something like that?
I've seen that commercial multiple times, and I just think, well, who okayed that? How did that get through the vetting process?
Yeah, it seems like there would be some sort of a substance abuse issue there, and that would cause it.
Let's compare our snack to a disease and see if people want it. Who thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, it's really incomprehensible.
It's memorable.
It is.
And maybe that's why they're doing
it. Well, that's why some commercials have those horrible jingles that they annoy you, but they're never going to leave your head.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes, bad publicity can be good publicity just because at least it's in your mind.
Yeah, and I think that might be what they're doing, a little reverse psychology there. Here's a little health tip for you from the Daily Mail. They always go back and forth, all the doctors on things, and every once in a while they come back to reality, and here we go. They say if you want a healthy brain, which I think we do, you should have eggs. They're good for you. You should eat eggs. And the yolks.
Mm-hmm.
Eat the yolks.
There's been a war against the yolks.
There has.
People only eating egg whites.
And so now they're coming back around and saying, well, you know what? You should eat these. They say previous research had linked eggs to both heart attacks and high blood pressure. And then they decided that really that's not the case. They say now that eating eggs only slightly raises blood cholesterol levels. But even there, there is such a thing as good cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And eggs have good cholesterol in it for the most part. They found that consuming eggs help people perform better in tests. One large egg boasts 6 grams of high-quality protein and antioxidants, and found within the egg yolk, by the way, that's where it is, as well as vitamin E, D, and A. And they found out that actually, when you eat eggs, it reduces the risk of heart attacks and strokes and so forth. So just one egg a day, they say, can reduce the risk of stroke by 12%.
I feel vindicated in my breakfast choices. Even just this morning, I made a trip to the store really early just to make sure we had eggs.
I eat eggs for breakfast pretty often. I really enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good for you. I mean, obviously, you could probably overdo it, but I don't think anyone's in danger of overdoing the egg consumption. but who knows? You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, a live link at thetrumpet.com. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau stopping by as well. You're a fan of the eggs, Abraham?
I'm actually allergic to eggs.
Oh, come on.
I'm not lying.
Like Mr. Armstrong, he had a problem with that because he was eating so many of them.
Huh.
But I forget exactly what his condition was.
Yeah, some people can't eat certain things. So what happens to you if you have an egg?
I get queasy, throw up sometimes.
Really?
It depends on how it's cooked. If it's really, really dry, it goes down better. If it's baked in something, it's okay. It's just when it's eggs, I just...
Did you always have that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, and you discovered that pretty early in life, I guess.
Yeah, we don't eat a lot of eggs at home growing up. My dad would, but even he has the same aversion to eggs. He just eats them anyway.
Wow.
So principled and
power
disciplined.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that does happen. There are some allergies out there, but in general... Abe kind of rained on my parade there about the eggs, but...
No, I agree with you, though. Eggs are healthy, and I do like eating them when I can.
It's too late to backtrack. I think you've made your feelings known.
Yes. I'm at war with the yolks.
Point of no return for you.
Right. Yeah. So, of course, this story is happening. A little basketball story. It's kind of interesting. Sources say that Allen Iverson, you might remember him from the 1990s, I guess, is to serve as head coach player in this new basketball league. It's called the Big Three. I don't know why they call it the Big Three. It has 8 teams. I don't know.
Maybe anyway. The playoffs are a 3-team tournament.
Maybe. They said he's going to appear at Wednesday, Allen Iverson, a news conference. It's so funny. He's going to be the head coach. His nickname when he played was Me, Myself, and Iverson.
That's the Big Three.
Yeah, that's true.
There it is. No wonder.
He's going to be him playing himself. No, they're starting this thing up. Hall of Fame guard Allen Iverson is committed to serve as head coach/player. I can imagine going into the huddle. What's the play call, coach? I'm probably going to shoot it.
Just give me the ball.
You go stand over there. He's going to be this in this big 3-on-3. That's why it's the big 3. It's a 3-on-3.
Okay.
Okay, that makes sense now. A professional basketball league that's set to launch this summer. He will be one of 8 dual head coach players in the league, which is backed by entertainment icon Ice Cube, and includes Roger Mason as president and commissioner. They're going to appear at this news conference. There's a few ex-NBA players doing this. It's a half-court thing, a 3-on-3, which is, as you get older, the half-court seems more and more appealing. They're going to travel through 8 cities and venues this summer. Other players include Chauncey Billups, Kenyon Martin, Rashard Lewis, Jermaine O'Neal, Steven Jackson, and my friend, Jason Williams. White chocolate. That's what they called him. Guy could dribble.
Oh, that sounds like...
Fabulous passing.
I would definitely go to that.
I would,
if
too.
If it was anywhere nearby.
Yeah, if it wasn't, you know, too much. Too expensive, I guess.
I don't really care. I'd save up. Yeah.
You got one fan, Big
Three. It's worth it.
Iverson's 41 now, so time's passing by. He was a 2001 NBA MVP and 11-time All-Star. And you might remember that he also said, practice? We talking about practice? This is his famous rant because he didn't want to practice, just want to play.
That moment, and also whenever he defiantly stepped over his down defender.
Tyronn Lue.
Yeah.
Who's now coach of the Cavs. He made a three-pointer and stepped over him and looked at him.
Those are like the two most iconic moments of his whole career.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with winning.
Not necessarily positive things.
A rant about practice and stepping over an opponent. So there you go. The Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Two programs today, and also the Trumpet Daily radio show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talked a fair bit about President Obama's farewell address, I guess if you call it that, last night, and highlighted a lot of the comments that he made, including one about the Constitution, one that he has sort of made before. I think he said the similar thing in his last State of the Union, where he mentioned the government. In this case, he said the Constitution is just a document. We the people make it live and breathe and have life. So interesting comment there. It's talked about a lot on the Trumpet Daily radio show. In relation to that, Grant, you have a story here from Fox News. The hidden message in Obama's farewell speech.
Yeah, I spent 15 or 20 minutes reading the transcript, and I have to say I didn't really agree with a single word of it. It's almost like he is still just living in that fantasy world. And this article talks about how he really spent most of his speech defending his progressive legacy. And when you contrast that with other presidents' farewell addresses, it's completely different, because other presidents were pointing toward the future. They were giving a big future vision of hope. He was kind of talking about the past 8 years and how he is justified in doing what he did.
Yeah, I heard a few segments of it and read a few segments as well. And yeah, he's doubling down on his ideals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It seems like this farewell is kind of a bigger deal than ones in the past. I don't recall it being such a big deal, like, say, the last one with President Bush or a few others. Maybe it was, and I just don't recall it. But it seems like this one really got more attention. You think that's right?
It really did, because this article even brings out how the farewell address for George W. Bush struggled to even get live airtime from most networks. Obviously, they were a lot more willing this time around to give airtime for this farewell address. But he kind of gave it in one of the back rooms of the White House. Yeah. Wasn't a whole lot of fanfare. He didn't, you know, sell out an arena for anything or anything like that. In contrast, Mr. Obama actually played the song, one of the songs that he had at his election winning party, I believe it was, or on the campaign to win the presidency. And he gave his speech in front of a gigantic emblem of the presidency, just to kind of indicate that he still is the president, even if it's for just a few more days. And this article described his speech as not so much a farewell address as a to-be-continued address, a lot more fanfare involved.
Yeah, I saw a few reports where they said he was really trying to rally the base and kind of get them fired up to keep pushing forward with their progressive ideology. So That has been sort of a question. Will he just go quietly into his library like a lot of presidents do, or will he be more out there publicly? And at least so far, it appears that he'll be more out there.
Right. He will actually be the first ex-president since Woodrow Wilson to stay in Washington, D.C. after being done with the presidency. And he made it pretty clear last night that he's going to be vocal about whatever issues he thinks require him being vocal, which could be illegal immigration, replacing Obamacare, climate change, the Iran nuclear deal. He's going to be speaking out. That will be a whole lot different from what George W. Bush did. He has made it a point never to speak out on any of the current issues.
Which I think is pretty admirable that he hasn't, President Bush hasn't, because the last 8 years have been a case of just moving in such a diametrically opposite way from just what the United States has kind of been historically. If there was ever a time to say something, you'd really want to say it then, I think, and he didn't. So I guess I admire the restraint, because but I kind of wish some people would have said a few more things, actually, over these last 8 years.
Yeah, it seems like there's a balance, and maybe George W. Bush didn't speak out enough necessarily. I mean, it was admirable that as many times as he was attacked that he didn't say anything. But also, you know, when you see the nation just spiraling out of control, maybe he could have said something. And then Mr. Obama might just be going to the opposite extreme, where pretty much on every little issue he could be speaking out.
Yeah, he'll be. He has weighed in. He's chosen to weigh in on several things during his administration, particularly with police situations and things like that. And so, which is interesting because even though he took sort of his victory lap last night, I don't know victory for what, but you then look at that story we had earlier about the way the police are handling their jobs, you know, where they're not stopping people anymore. Mm-hmm. Is that the victory? By him weighing in and pushing his thinking, the victory is now suspicious people are allowed to continue?
Right. That was one of the things that he did name as a victory was the way that they have handled criminal justice. He's been pursuing criminal justice reform, which means changing the laws, not punishing the criminal, but changing the laws so that the criminal doesn't need to be punished anymore, hardly, or at least they receive a lot lighter of sentences than they would have. That hasn't really worked, so you know, what he's been doing is releasing a lot of people from prison early on lighter sentences. It's not a victory to have that happen when basically he's emboldening criminals to act out against the police, especially when he is given a lot of legitimacy to groups like Black Lives Matter, which should be deemed, and I believe it is officially deemed, a domestic terrorist organization.
Yeah, and that's a big part of the speech last night. I mean, he did give credibility to that group or to people that would be sympathetic to that cause, basically kind of doubling down on what he has said in the past, which is, well, racism isn't gone. You know, it's still around. And those words send such a strong message, such a divisive message to those communities, to all the communities, really. But he's really targeting those minority groups and telling them, you know, you're not getting a fair shake here. Did you know that?
Yeah, and the point brought out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show was that he was saying at the start of his presidency that we could be living in a post-racial world, that, and most 70% of Americans actually at the time believed that race relations would improve under President Obama. I don't think anyone believes that now. And now, even last night, he went out and said that wasn't even a realistic goal, to live in a post-racial world when the effects of Jim Crow still haven't faded away yet, apparently.
Right, and you have to say, well, okay, well, what's the message there? I mean, if your message is, oh, it's not realistic that we could have this post-racial world, what you're saying, but you're also saying, you know, there are all these injustices in the minority community against them. What's the message that you're sending? Isn't it to be, I don't know, more divided, to be more upset, whatever form that takes? That's the message that it's sending, because it's like telling them, well, you're not getting a fair shake, and it's because people are racist, and, well, that's just the way it is.
Well, that's a terrible message.
Yeah, I think for what I've seen and reading some reactions, I think the way the speech was presented, more than just a pat on the back from himself, it was also meaning to pin his failures on the future, rather than the opposite. Usually, like you mentioned, and as Grant mentioned, most presidents look to the future and say, we have more hope for the future. Hopefully they won't make the same mistakes as us. When really President Obama is pinning all these crises and terrible downturns that have happened in the past 8 years, pinning them on the future presidents, and that it's a shame that he has to leave because he was the messiah of all these different issues. If you read his victory speech, he said that he's basically an expert on race relations. He knows exactly what to do. That's a big reason why he got so much support, was for his view on race relations in such a positive light. And in 8 years, he's gone completely the opposite direction. Now, is that whose fault is that? That things have gone in a downturned direction. Not all of it is his fault. But he is the chief executive, and he does have to take responsibility for defeat. And it just seems to me that it's easy to cry a river of tears in front of people who support you, but most of the nation does not support him. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how he's received at when he's gone, because it's easy to give speeches in front of arenas full of your supporters.
Yeah, I thought that too, even listening to the Trump Daily Radio Show, that, well, sure, you can set it up to where everybody in the room agrees with you, and then you sound like this hero. Well, why don't you go speak to the people that don't agree with you? And then what happens? We've seen that a little bit, and it's usually very vindictive and don't talk to me, and you know, he's not going to hear it. If you want to make a sports analogy, an athlete in sports that has that type of attitude is called a front runner. When everything's going your way, well, you're gloating. And as soon as you don't win, it's the ref's fault and everybody else's fault, and your teammate didn't pass you the ball. It's called being a front runner, and that's what he is politically.
Yeah, that's really what he is. He hasn't accepted the fact that a lot of people, most of the country, has rejected him. In the two midterm elections, the Democrats lost a lot of seats based on some of his policies that were really too radical for most of the country to stomach. Even though he did rule for 8 years, he lost a lot of Democratic seats along the way and really has paved the way for Republicans to be entrenched in leadership in this country. And then a third time they rejected him after those two midterm elections was whenever he was going all out to support Hillary Clinton. And the country said, well, we don't really necessarily want a president who's going to continue your legacy. He has continued to defend this legacy. He has continued to imagine that the country still supports him, even though somehow he went horribly off track to elect Mr. Trump.
It's going to be interesting to see the transition, what happens after the fact. Very divided nation, for sure. Very divided. So that's you can read the rest of that right up foxnews.com, the hidden message in Obama's farewell speech. Do you know what song he played, by the way? You mentioned he played one of his songs.
It was from U2, something like City of Glowing Lights, or I forget the exact title.
Yeah, interesting. Maybe they should have played Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2. Yeah. That'd be a good one. I was actually thinking about songs for politicians and President-elect Trump. In his campaign, he should have chosen an old song from, I think, the 80s or 90s by the group Morrissey. The more you ignore me, the closer I get. Because that's what happened. They sang, you're wasting your time. The more you ignore me, the closer I get. That's what the media did. The closer he got. Well, pretty interesting to see what's happening there. If you drive a Honda, you might want to pay attention to this recall information. And it doesn't just affect Honda. It affects quite a few vehicles. But Honda Motor Company is recalling 772,000 additional Honda and Acura vehicles in the U.S. for defective front passenger seat airbag inflators made by Japanese supplier Takata. And they supply a lot of car manufacturers. And so they have a problem with them. I guess if there's an accident, they can kind of explode and blow shrapnel out. And it has resulted in some deaths. People have been injured and from the metal shrapnel getting sent into the passenger compartments. Among the models recalled are the 2005-06 Acura MDX, 2005-12 Acura RL, 2008-2012 Honda Accord, 2006-2011 Honda Civic, 2007-2012 Honda Fit, and the 2010-2012 Honda Insight. And so that is added to a list of some other Hondas. So basically, if you've got a Honda somewhere in the 2005-12 range, you might want to check it out. And it's affected other cars, too. So that's the last thing you want is that airbag causing damage.
Yeah, that sounds like an explosive device, like an actual terrorist-made bomb to send out shrapnel like that. That's what the Boston bombing was.
It would be such a horrible feeling to be an executive or somebody at that company and realize, our product is doing this, and we've got to recall. They said it's going to take years to get this solved because there's millions and millions of vehicles out there that have these air, because they're a big, huge supplier for the airbags. So, it's the inflator is the issue, that is causing the problem. So.
Yeah. Wow. Well, airbags are mini explosions. I mean, they use the same principles as a explosive device, except they, instead of sending out reaction of fire and shrapnel is supposed to just create the explosive inflation of the device, because it has to happen very, very fast in the instance of an accident.
You've got an older truck. Do you have one in yours?
I think it's supposed to, but I think if I hit most things, it probably won't set anything off.
It's a tank. Yeah.
Yes.
You'd have to really get nailed for there to be a problem.
Yeah.
I still think the best idea for the airbag was the old Saturday Night Live Jiffy Pop airbag.
Yeah.
Blows up and there's popcorn inside. So you can eat.
It does look like a popcorn bag.
It does. Officer comes around. How you doing? He's like, fine. How's the popcorn? So,
you share some with them,
right? Because that's the exact thing you'd want to do after an accident is eat popcorn. But they do save some lives, so probably good in some ways. But again, a recall there if you've got one of those Takata Corporation airbags. I don't know how you would know that necessarily. I guess you could call or do a little more research on that. And then what do you do about it? I don't know. I think you kind of take it in and they got to replace it and all that. So it's a little bit of a hassle.
Yeah, you have to. You could be without your car for a period of time. I think they give you one to replace it. But yeah, it's just the hassle, I think, is the thing that infuriates most people.
Yeah, understandable. Abraham, you've got an article for us here. This is kind of jumping to the other side of the political aisle with President-elect Donald Trump. It's from the BBC. Trump denies Russian leverage amid claims of compromising material. This has been in the headlines the last few days. There's claims out there that the Russians have something on him, and he says that's not true. What are the details of the story?
Yeah, this is perhaps, hopefully it is, but it could be the climax of all the Russian hacking accusations that have been going through the last couple months.
Hopefully it's the end. I'm getting kind of tired of that.
Yeah, it's just a very difficult situation, and especially for someone who hasn't even taken office yet. I think it does threaten to completely undercut his credibility. There's just a lot of misinformation, I think misperception about the issue. And this follows right before the CIA, FBI, NSA, and I think another agency came before Congress and testified about the synopsis they released, showing that there has been some Russian tampering in the election. But it's not what most people think. And I did watch part of the proceedings of the congressional committee, and they did ask whether they asked these top chairmen whether Russia tampered with the actual election of ballot boxes and all that, and they said no. So the Russian hacking does not affect how people voted. It's more about perception,
right?
And news and stuff released during the election and afterwards.
You know, it's interesting. I wonder if they went back and looked at past elections, would you find the same thing?
They did. The report does have historical context. They go back to Jimmy Carter. Apparently, Russia had an insider in his election committee that tried to sway certain things. But they do say that there's never been this kind of direct involvement from Russia before.
Probably partially because of technology, because of the way you can spread information. But again, and it is a very interesting thing to look at and important, but I always go back to the thought that, well, the communism has really had a foothold on the education in the U.S. for the last how many ever years. They've been tampering all right in a much more serious way than even this. But this is still very interesting to look at.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the point of this is, personally, I've been trying to steer clear of the subject because it's, to me, I think it's a red herring, where I think it's completely irrelevant to the main issues of the day. And when you actually look at the facts on the ground, I don't think Russia really helped Trump that much. And if so, it was without his knowledge. This BuzzFeed released some memos from, and he's from, and the memos originate from a British intelligence officer. He's anonymous. That the American intelligence agencies have relied on before. There have been some misinformation in these memos that have been revealed, but they were released and people aren't sure if they're credible or not. Most news agencies aren't picking them up, except for BuzzFeed, of course. So it's just causing more misinformation. Donald Trump, in fact, has a press conference today about this accusation. We're expecting a statement from him. And it's about a 35-page dossier of memos. I think from what the indications are right now, a lot of it is fake information or misinformation. But I think what's happening here, I think the big thing to take away from all this different news and different back and forth on this is that Russia could have very well done some things in the election. But I think if you look at, we all remember the election, the news coverage of Mr. Trump, how the big five stations were basically gave Hillary the victory before he even was elected. I don't really see a way in which Russia positively helped Mr. Trump if you look at the evidence. How did they manipulate the media to make him look good when in fact, the American media was so set against him, it was almost impossible to find anything positive about him, except unless it came from conservative media. And I think, I don't know, to me, there just isn't enough evidence showing of how it affected people's behavior to for it to be a legitimate claim.
Yeah, the media really has no one except themselves to blame for that. If they hadn't destroyed their own credibility so thoroughly in the first place, those so-called fake news stories that were out there would have had no impact because people would have been relying on mainstream media already.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of, and I don't know if it's in this write-up or not, but I mean, I've heard them say the intelligence community has found that Russia tampered. That's all I've heard. Mm-hmm. How? What specifically did they do?
Well, they won't release most of the evidence in terms of like a press statement. The congressional committee right now is going over the evidence with the chairmans. But from what I can glean and from what they've released so far, basically they released that 2-page synopsis, and it's based off of tips from other people in Europe and Britain about Russian activity. And it's based off of basically just leads from foreign spies or intelligence gatherers.
So and we have to trust them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the issue is that even as the BBC goes through here is that some of it has been proven to be misinformation. So even if there is a grain of truth of it, a lot of it has been proven to have wrong errors or have errors and wrong facts in the memos that they're using. Now, there could be more proof that they're just not telling anyone about. But right now, that's really all it's going after. And I think just basically the media is amplifying this to a level it should never have gotten to. And there's plenty of historical precedent for that. The media taking a small little minor incident and blowing it up into a huge matter. And I think that's what this is. Imagine if Donald Trump lost and he accused the same thing to Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be accused of just lying and trying to underwrite the system. And that's exactly what these people are doing now. They're completely undermining the American political process, saying that Russia affected the election when the intelligence agencies say explicitly that they didn't affect voting. Voting was like the actual ballots and how they were counted. All that was not affected by any Russian hacking. So that the election is just as legitimate as it was before.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just where would it lead to? Like, even I mean, we could think about with Donald Trump's presidency certainly would undermine his credibility in some level. But if we project further down the road, do they have to have some sort of election reform to where it doesn't happen the way that it does because you have to protect against interference? And what would that be? That would be elites, right? Choosing that. I mean, where else would you go with that? We need some people that are above the system to make this decision, which they kind of are asking for now anyway. Some people did anyway, because they said, well, we think the Electoral College should vote however they want. We don't care what the actual, you know, popular vote in their area was. And those seeds are already kind of being planted of like, well, maybe we need somebody that knows better than us that can't be, you know, tampered with by the Russians to choose the president. And then you've done away with democracy, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's where this is leading, is that eventually if these people think this is credible enough, it could create a government agency in which it regulates information. What information is deemed true and false. I think that's the danger here. It's not that who cares if what Russia... I mean, it's important to look at and to realize, but if that's as far as it goes, it doesn't really matter. There are much, much bigger issues facing America than spending all our time on this. But what it could lead to is the media being neutered, pretty much, to the point where someone has to decide what's come from a foreign agency, what's espionage, to the point where someone could really manipulate the information passed to us, or they could completely discredit something that they don't agree with.
Isn't that strange? They're using the fear of information being manipulated to try to probably get power to manipulate information.
Yes.
Because it matters who's manipulating the information.
Right.
If it's a righteous elite who is manipulating it, then it's totally fine.
Yeah, in their viewpoint.
Yeah.
And that really ties back in with the Trump at Daily Radio show today, because that's what host Stephen Fleury brought out about President Obama's farewell address. And is that his thinking, his ideology, what he's been taught is that liberal elites know better than everybody else. If you want to kind of sum it up in one little thing, it's that. And so they should not be constrained by the Constitution. They shouldn't be constrained by what Joe Average, like us three, think about anything. They know better, and they want to take on that God prerogative and choose and tell people what they've decided. And it is like that in some countries, a lot of countries around the world. That's what makes the United States different, is we haven't been like that. So I don't want to be like those nations, those other ones where you do have, like a Russia, where you do have a Vladimir Putin that does tell you what's what.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most amazing thing from this is that it does kind of go into a trend we're seeing. I wrote an article on the Trump.com about a month ago or so called The War on History. And we've talked about the statistics from a study showing that millennials favor authoritarian governments. Still a minority, but it's a trend that's increasing. And I think when you look at those statistics with this kind of behavior, you're seeing that in the future, this could become very, very legitimate, especially when you look at how millennials vote. They're almost overwhelmingly Democrat and not central Democrat, left-wing Democrat. And we could actually see this come to place. I think with right now, it'd be very difficult with old timers holding things back, but in a good way. But you have a future generation taught by leftist educational people who are radical left and they got their ideas from communism, indoctrinating the future generations to where this could become a reality,
and pushing it all with a fear of Russia.
Yes.
Talk about good spy work.
Yeah.
that's pretty ingenious. Interesting situation. We'll see how that progresses. That'll do it for us on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau, thanks for being with us today. Kia David, Trump Daily Radio Show on the way. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. 101.3 KPCG.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.